You're listening to the Cryptid Creatures Show with Brian and Todd. If you're enjoying the show or would like to submit an encounter, visit our website at www.cryptidcreatures.net, or you can email us at info@cryptidcreatures.co. Now back to the show.
This thing walked out. It took one step and jumped, one leap, jumped across the creek, right down in front of me, and stopped on the other side of the creek and looked right at me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was hard to believe. I thought, am I really seeing this? And this thing was really huge, and it didn't look friendly. And it looked right at me. It showed me its teeth, and it gritted its teeth at me. It was staring right at me. And by this time, I had my hand on my gun, and I thought, well, if I shoot this thing and don't kill it, it's coming over here and pulling me out of this tree.
Welcome back to the Cryptid Creatures Show. This is Brian, and with me as always, my co-host Todd. What's up, buddy?
Hello, sir. How's it going over there tonight? What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot, man. Just chilling.
Ready to do another episode?
Ready.
Tonight, we're bringing on Daryl Denton. Daryl, as you know, has been involved in Bigfoot research for a long time. He's got a Bigfoot group page out there with almost 23,000 members. We'll talk about that with him tonight, too. And I think he's seen more than one creature, so I'm really excited to see what he's got to tell us and hear his stories.
Yeah, I know. Can't wait to hear.
You ready?
Yep, let's get him.
Hello?
Hello.
Boom. There he is.
Hey, Daryl.
Hey.
Morning.
Y'all doing okay today?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Yeah, not bad.
Good, man. Great. Yeah. Great. Appreciate you having me on. I'm honored to be here.
It's an honor for us to have you.
Y'all got a great show. I've been watching quite a few of them. They're really good.
Well, thanks.
Thanks.
I got an off-the-wall question for you, Daryl. How tall are you?
A little over 6'5". I've shrunk a little bit over the years.
I thought you were a tall dude. I saw some pictures of you online. You have the group Bigfoot Believers and Other Creatures with almost 23,000 members to boot. What made you start that?
Well, I guess it was about 2000. I don't remember the exact year. I've been asked that several times, but it was somewhere around 2015 or 16. Michael Patterson and I are good friends, and we started another group. And he's still a close friend. I'm still in his group. He's in my group. I just had some issues there, because there were so many people on there that were, ridiculing and criticism, and I didn't like it. And it was kind of a difference in opinion, you know. It's okay. He felt like that everybody had the right to say what they liked. And I just decided to start my own group about this time last year. And, a lot of those members are still there, but a lot of them came with me. And biggest reason was because of, I don't believe there should be any criticism or ridicule at all. So, because people should be able to tell their encounters or stories, show their photos, even if someone calls them, you know, they can't see it, it's blurry or whatever, that's still a right for everybody to be able to share their encounters and comments without being ridiculed. And we don't allow any of that. If you ridicule, you get a warning. And if you don't like the way it works, you need to go somewhere else.
Yep, so, that's how we run ours too. So that's how we believe too. Mm-hmm.
But that was the reason I started it. I still think the world of Mike, and we're still close friends. And I visit him occasionally over there, and he visits me. But just the difference in opinion, you know, the way I feel about it. But my group is so big because of all the great members I have. I mean, I have great, huge members, I call, you know, Ron Moorhead, those type people, to smaller guys like me who have just had encounters and been around many of these creatures over the years. And a lot of good members who help out, my moderators, my admin, and, you know, Kristen and Brandy of Blinds and Booze are very close friends, and they do my admin, and we've been friends for a long time. And a lot of good people that helped me out in that group. So that's the biggest reason. I appreciate you guys being in there.
Yeah, it's a big group. You did that in a year? You've got that many members in about a year, you said?
We started the end of last February. So it's been a little over a year.
Wow.
But, you know, it's really amazing. I know a lot of people in the Bigfoot cryptid world, and they know me, and I've known a lot of them, especially in the South, because a lot more people know me in the South than they do up in the North or out West, and a lot of those people have joined. But surprisingly, I've got a huge audience in Canada and Scotland and as far as Saudi Arabia. So I was kind of surprised. I think we're in 19 countries. But people that I really didn't know that kind of picked up. And like I said, it has a lot to do with my members and how good they are inviting people. And I think we were averaging about 146 members a day. That's dropped a little bit. It fluctuates up and down, but I guess we still are. I don't know. We were the fastest group in Facebook history. So I don't know if we still are. Probably are. Maybe not. It doesn't matter about that anyway. But as long as everybody's on there and they're trying to learn and understand from each other and be kind and courteous, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. Yep. Where are you located at, Daryl?
Well, I'm from Tennessee, is where I've always lived, but I stay on the East Coast. My ex lives here, and my younger kids, my 9-year-old, 14-year-old, are here. And I stay up here about 2 weeks out of the month with them, and then I go home for a couple of weeks. About 841-mile drive. It's a haul. But I do that every month. Then I visit my parents are back home close to my place, and my oldest daughter and my grandson are there. So I try to split time with everybody equally, and then when I get home, I usually hang out with my research partners and Barton Nunley and Barton Groves, two of my best friends, and you know, Billy Howell, he's been with me a long time as a research partner, and Beth Collinsworth up in Lebanon, Tennessee. But have a lot of friends there, and I don't research like I once did, but we get out, and I don't even call myself a researcher. I call myself an experiencer, but because I think that's what it really is. But I don't think there is an expert in anything. So we get out to the LBL at least once or twice a month, Martin Groves and I and Barton Nunley. And Billy and I mainly research in the Tennessee at one of our old spots there. But I enjoy doing that, getting out with them. We've seen some crazy stuff in the last year. So
yeah, we've been wanting to get out to the LBL too. That sounds like a really nice place to go.
It's probably the strangest place that I've been going there all my life, but it's even stranger now than it was then. So I think there's more cryptids than there ever was, and I don't understand why that is, but it seems to be more of them than it once was.
I think you're right. Well, you had a few encounters yourself, or a couple at least, right?
I've had quite a few encounters over the years since my first encounter, which was in November of 92. So it's been about almost 31 years since I've been involved in this, but long time, getting old quick, but time goes by fast.
Why don't you take us back to that first encounter and then tell us what happened to you?
Sure. My grandfather had a farm in Cannon County, Tennessee, and I pretty much stayed with my grandparents when I was a kid, because it's about 90 miles from Nashville, and I stayed there a lot with my grandparents until I started school. And my mom and dad worked in Nashville, and they would stay in Nashville all week because it was just too hard to drive to work, and I would stay with my grandparents. And I pretty much stayed there through the summer and everything else for years, and lived with them most of the time. But I was very close to my grandparents. But every year toward the very end of October, the first week of November was in Tennessee. It was opening weekend of black powder season, which was muzzleloader. I'm sure you're familiar with that. You had 1 week of that. And we went up there for about 5 or 6 years, me and three of my close friends that I hunted with. And we would take my camper. At that time, I had a camper. I'd pull my truck, and they would follow two or three other trucks with our four-wheelers. And we would go to my grandfather's house and park out next to his barn and hook up all of our power from his barn and just have a good time deer hunting. And this particular year, like I said, that was probably our fifth year up there, maybe sixth year, the same guys, three good friends of mine that I hunted with for years. And we got up there, set our camp up next to the barn, and just like we always did, grill out, have a good time, and go out and go to our deer stands. And we had some stands built up there, and we had some that we, our carry stands too. And I had asked my grandfather, we always got deer every year. And most everybody limited that year, that opening week, everybody got at least one buck. And I'd asked my grandfather at that time, he was 92 years old. He was in fantastic health. Everybody thought he was 75 because he was out cutting wood at 92. So he was very in good shape and took good care of himself. But I'd asked him, I said, what would be the best place to go to get a trophy deer? Because I want to try something different this year. And all my friends had already went out to their regular spots and set up. And I was on his back porch, and he pointed over behind his back porch, which was just nothing but hills and hollows for miles. And it's super remote out there. There's not a lot of homes or anything in the area, a lot of farms, but it's real remote. And he said, well, if I was you, I would go over. He pointed over, he said, you see that third ridge? And I said, yeah. He said, I would go over that. And at the bottom of that is my old home place, and I'd been there before, but by road, and but it'd been years since I'd been there. He said, I would go there. That's probably your chance for your biggest deer, because nobody ever goes back in there. And I said, okay. So I got my climbing stand, and I kind of wore it like a backpack when I went into the woods, and I headed that way and went on the search for it. And you go through the back of his property through a gate, and then the gate opens up into a sage grass field that's probably about 200 yards wide and probably a half a mile long. And that's where his cattle were. He had cows. And you walked all the way over to the wood line, and there was a barbed wire fence you had to cross. And I crossed that fence, and you have to go over three real steep hills, hollows. I mean, practically 45 degrees, the last one. It's really pretty much straight down. And I walked over, went all the way back there, and when I crossed the third ridge and got down to the bottom, there's a creek there. And the creek, it's not a real wide creek. It might be 10 foot wide, maybe 12 foot. But it runs all year round, probably a foot deep of water. And he said, you'll see the old grist mill to the left. And I'd found the spot that he had mentioned, and I could see the roof of the old house he had. It had fallen down at that time, but it was kind of up to the left, probably 100 yards from me, but I could see the remnants of it. And I walked the creek bank area there and crossed the creek and looked around and found a good spot where deer had been coming in. I actually had found a real nice rub, which a buck deer will make when they're marking their territory. And then I went back to the other side of the creek, and I was on kind of like a 45 degree angle. The hills that was that much of the steepness of the angle of it. And I put my stand around a tree. I found one good, and I climbed up the tree in my tree stand and cut a few limbs off with a little saw I had in my pack, and got set up and had my stand around it, and I was ready to go. And I crossed back over the creek, and I had what was called a drag rag on my shoe that I always put in it. It's like a little strap and kind of keeps the scent off when you're going into the area to hunt. And I hung that on a tree limb on the other side of the creek, and I jumped up and grabbed the limb and put it on the limb. It was about, I'm saying maybe about 10 foot off the ground. I had to jump up and grab it, and when I let it go, it kind of went up. And what that does is kind of leave a scent all down through that hollow area and hopefully attract the deer in. Then I crossed back across the creek again and went back to my grandfather's place. And it was about a 45-minute walk back there. It was a pretty good walk. And I told my granddad, I said, I was sleeping out in the camper with my friends. And I said, if you don't mind, wake me up in the morning when you get up. And he always got up at 4 or 4:30 because he would come to the barn to milk his cows. And that next morning he came, knocked on the side of the camper and said, my granddad never called me by my name. He always called me boy. And he said, boy, time to get up. And I got up, got my gear, and headed that way. And as I went through the field and crossed the first fence, I think I'd made it over into about the other side of either going up the hill or the other side. And I started hearing something walking, and it sounded like a person walking. And I couldn't imagine anybody being in there. It's so remote. Plus, nobody would hunt on my grandfather's property without his permission. So I looked, shined the flashlight several times. I didn't see anything. It was over to the left of me, it was up on the hill. And I walked on down and crossed the next hill, and I could still hear it walking up there, but I couldn't see it. When I stopped, it would stop. And I started thinking, well, there's another hunter in here. But I knew it wasn't my friends because I knew exactly what area they were in. And so I got, I started thinking, I don't really know what this is, but I went on down and I found the creek and I walked around the creek because I didn't know that area real good in there. The creek was my marker to find my stand. I followed the creek around and I found my stand. It's one of those climbing stands. You got your feet in apart and then you got the back you set in on as you climb up. And I climbed up into the tree kind of hurriedly because I was thinking, well, somebody's in here or something's in here. And I kept thinking somebody was in there. So I climbed on up in the tree and I got set. And that was probably, I don't remember exactly, probably 6 o'clock or a little after when I got set up, and it was still dark. I couldn't see anything very well and I didn't hear anything. It was real quiet. And about daylight that morning, it was a real foggy morning, and the creek had fog on it, and it was really kind of hard to see on the other side of the creek. But as the fog lifted and the daylight started coming up, I could hear the regular animals running around, squirrels and things in the woods, and it was kind of like the woods came alive. And I was just being very quiet. I was in my stand, and you have a little bar that I can pull down in front of me and lean my gun against, and it has like a camo cover that covers me up, my feet and everything, and from about my chest down covers you up pretty good. And I always wore blackout under my eyes and wore to keep the sun glare, because a lot of times a deer can spot a shiny spot, and I always wore that. And it was a little later that morning. I'd sat there quite a while, and it was, I'm guessing, probably 7:30 or a little later. There was a huge cane thicket to the left of me that run up this creek bank. And I guess you know what a cane thicket is. It's like real tall cane that grows on a river or a creek bank. And it ran a pretty good ways up there. There was a little ravine in between it and where it started to my left. This cane was probably 12, 15 foot tall, and it was real thick, and it went all the way down the bank. And I noticed to the left a deer come out of somewhere around that cane. I don't know if it came out of it or on the other side of it or what, but I seen a deer come out, and it walked down across the creek and went up on the bank. And right on the other side of that bank was a game trail, and that's basically that game trail run all the way around, all the way down the edge of that bank of that creek on the far side. And that's where I hung the drag rag in that tree. And then two more deer came out and they followed that deer, and they were just walking around over in that area, and just like deer do, kind of milling around and eating acorns on the ground and kind of just kind of putting around in the leaves and kicking around a little bit trying to find food. And I watched them for a good while, probably 30 to 45 minutes. And they were calm, didn't seem startled. They didn't see me. And I guess it was about, after I'd watched them a while, it was probably around a little after 8, I'm thinking, because I remember I had one of those old Iron Man watches on, and that we used to wear back in the day, and it had a little timer you could push on them, and I always pushed that timer when I seen a deer, because they let me know when I'd seen them, or if I decided to come back again, I would have a time frame in there. And I remember it was 8:23 in the morning, and these deer were just, all of a sudden, they came to a stop, and they were staring to the left, the lead deer, the bigger one, and there was one to the right and one to the left of it. They looked like they might have been yearlings from that deer. They weren't real large deer. The female lead deer was a good-sized doe. But she was staring right into that, over toward that cane area, and her ears went up, and I noticed the other two deer did the same thing, and she was looking right in that area, and I was thinking, well, here comes a big buck. It's coming out of that area over there. And then all of a sudden, she stuck her nose up and moved her head a couple times and let out a real loud blow like a deer does. And usually when they do that, they're startled because of something. And it's very unusual to see one do that unless they are startled. And then she took her left foot, her right foot, and kind of pawed 2 or 3 times. And then all of a sudden, she turned to the right and ran back across in front of me, all three of them, like somebody had shot at them. They were just, I'd never seen deer do that without them being startled. And they just ran, took off as fast as they could to the right. And I thought, wow, this, it must be a big deer, another big buck over there, but it's kind of strange why the deer would run like that. And it was just a few minutes later, I seen the cane moving over in kind of the center of it, and it was moving real like something big in there was moving the cane. I couldn't imagine a deer this size the way the cane was moving. And then out steps this creature. And at that time, I don't know that I didn't believe in Bigfoot, but I didn't believe they were in Tennessee. I always thought they were in the west, far western state, if they existed, would be Washington or California or Oregon or the British Columbia, that area. But this thing walked out, it took one step and jumped across the creek, and it landed about on the game trail there. And it walked down to walked in front of me to my right. I'm at an angle 45 degree, kind of looking over it, maybe 50 to 70 feet from it. And it walked right down in front of me and stopped on the other side of the creek and looked right at me. Well, by this time I was just, couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was hard to believe. I thought, am I really seeing this? And this thing was really huge, and it didn't look friendly. And it looked right at me. It showed me its teeth, and it gritted its teeth at me. It was staring right at me. And by this time, I had my hand on my gun, and I thought, well, if I shoot this thing and don't kill it, it's coming over here and pulling me out of this tree. And I was a little leery to shoot it because I didn't think one bullet would take this thing down. And I just had my hand on my gun. I never knew I had fear in me like that. That's the scariest I've ever been. And I'm not easy to scare. I've camped in those woods by myself plenty of nights, but not that deep in. But this thing just stared at me, and then it let out a growl. And it was a growl like I've never heard before. It was a real low, intense growl. Like it was really angry. And then it walked over to my right, now across in front of me, a little past me, to where that tree limb had that drag rag in it. It reached up, grabbed that drag rag, and pulled it down and smelled of it, and then just ripped the whole limb completely out of the tree and threw it on the ground. And then it walked a couple steps back to the left and faced me again. And then it let out a scream. Oh, man, I still feel that scream today. It was I've never heard a scream like that. And I've listened to the Sierra Sounds. I've listened to every scream, I guess, that everybody's ever published on you know, the media or even on the Facebook, social media, it was a scream like I've never heard. And it was loud and it was so intense, it echoed all down that hollow. And by this time, I was so frightened that I could barely move. I didn't know if it was going to, I thought for sure it was coming across the creek and it was just going to jerk me out of that tree. And it was, I could barely even move. I was so in shock that I was actually seeing this. And it was looking at me after that just for a few seconds. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to run and shoot this thing? And then all of a sudden it turned completely around and walked straight into the brush and the trees. And I watched it for a probably good 5 or 6 minutes as it walked. I couldn't see it anymore. It walked out of distance. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to take time climbing down the tree. So I pushed the bar down in front of me that had that camo skirt, and I just jumped. And I was about probably 25 feet in the tree. And when I landed, it was leaves and it was a steep hill. And I slid all the way down that bank and slid into the creek. And I had my gun in my hand above my head. And I jumped up, looked back to see if I could see it. And I jumped up on the bank and I ran all the way around the side of that bank. And there was a little ravine there that was a little narrow place that I'd come in on, and I ran up to the top of that hill, run as fast as I've ever run, and I kept looking back, and I didn't see it, and by the time I got to the top of the first hill, there's a couple of old barbed wire fences in between those hollows, but they were old and low enough you could jump across them, and when I got to the bottom of the second hill and jumped that fence and got started up to the second hill, I looked back on the hill, the first hill, and it was standing there looking at me. And I thought, well, this thing's going to chase me down and catch me. And by that time, I don't know if it was the same animal, the same creature, or it was another one, but it was one standing there looking at me, just in the wide open on top of that hill. Well, by that time, I was really even more scared. So I ran up over that hill and I ran down to the last hill and crossed, got on top of it, looked back, did not see it. As I come down the third hill, I was running as fast as I could. And that was the hill that had the new barbed wire fence that I had to go across to get to the sage field between my grandfather's house and his gate. And I was running down that hill as fast as I could, and I jumped the fence, and when I did, I caught the bottom of my pants and ripped them all the way up to my thigh and cut a big gash in it, but I didn't even know it until I got to the house. I just kept running. I crossed that field about 200 yards wide and got to my grandfather's gate, which opened up to get to his house, and went through that gate and locked it back, and I was looking for the creature, didn't see it anywhere. And I ran in up onto my grandfather's back porch, and he had one of these old farmhouses that had a back porch with like posts on the back and overhang. And I opened up the door and ran into his house. There was a screen door between that door and the larger door. And I ran in and shut the door and locked it. And I was looking out the glass in the door and I didn't see it. And I ran into the right there. His kitchen went into the living area that my grandfather was set in all the time. And he was sitting there in his rocking chair when I ran in. And there was a big potbelly stove in the middle of, between the corner and the middle of the room. And I went over and just sat down on the floor next to it. I was just trying to catch my breath. And at the same time, I was just scared to death. And I kept getting up, looking out the windows and making sure this thing wasn't coming. And my grandfather said, "Boy, what's wrong with you?" And I said, "I don't know, Granddad. I've never seen anything like that. I just seen a monster in the woods." He said, "A monster?" I said, "Yeah, I've never seen anything like that." He said, "What did it look like?" And I told him, I said, "It was the meanest looking thing I ever seen. And it was just a huge creature. And I thought it was going to get me." And he said, "Oh, you seen the wood burger?" I said, "Wood burger?" I said, "What is a wood burger?" And he said, "Oh, boy, they've been around here 2 years. I've seen four in my lifetime, but they don't bother you. They just don't want you in their territory. He said the old folks, which he called his family and people older than him, he said they called him the wood booger. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me about these things? He said, well, you've been camping in the woods here and spending the night in the hayloft and had your friends up here all your life. If I'd have told you, you never would have went out in the woods. And I said, well, I guess you're right about that. And I was still a nervous wreck at this time. And he said, boy, you look like you've seen a ghost. And I said, I think I seem worse than a ghost. And he said, well, these things don't bother you. I see them when I'm out working in the field. I look up and one of them's watching me. And he said, even in the wintertime, they get hungry and they come up to the farm here. My grandfather had a huge log hen house to the left of his back porch, and he had a lot of chickens in there. And he said, they'll come up here in the wintertime and they'll take two or three chickens, and they'll take them and they'll leave a little stack of rocks and sticks like they're paying for them. And I said, really? He said, yeah, they've been around here all my life, and as far as I've known, they've been here forever. And I just was really shocked. I was just still a nervous wreck because I couldn't believe I'd seen anything like this. And I sat there in the house with my grandfather and tried to calm down for several hours, probably mid-afternoon. And then I noticed my friends had came in. They had gotten a deer, and one of them had it hanging in the tree out there next to the barn, and they were skinning it out. And I was trying to get composure, and I went out to talk to them. And I said, guys, y'all been coming here a long time. Have y'all ever seen anything in the woods? Any kind of creature down in the woods? And I remember they looked at me and said, what are you talking about? And a lot of my friends have always called me Big D. They said, Big D, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, anything like a Bigfoot? And they all started laughing. A Bigfoot? No, we had never seen anything like that. So I didn't say anything else about it. I could tell they didn't accept that very well. So, but I was pretty scared to death still. And I was just I never had a feeling about that place like that before. And my friends were having a good time, and I was pretty much done with my hunting. And I stayed out there with them till it got close to dark and grilled out and had a good time with them, tried to have a good time. And I didn't stay in the camper anymore that whole trip, and we were there a week. I went and stayed in the house with my grandfather, and I didn't hunt anymore. They did. But that was pretty much my first encounter, and it took me years to get over that. So I probably had nightmares for the first couple of weeks. I didn't sleep at all. But I pretty much had nightmares for years. I didn't go in the woods for right around 7 years. I didn't hunt in the woods. And I've never been back to that spot. As far as I know, my stand is still there unless the creature tore it out or somebody got it. And I had binoculars hanging up in the tree, and also had a fanny pack that had my powder horn in it and my shells. I guess they're still there, but never been back there.
I bet you they're probably not there anymore. I'm guessing he probably came back and got rid of that stuff for you.
Probably did. It's a very good possibility. As big as this, mean as this thing looked, it could have pretty much done whatever it wanted to do.
Can you describe it for us, Daryl? Describe what you saw.
Yeah, it was, I actually went to the library, and at that time I didn't have a cell phone, and social media really didn't exist at that time. If it did, I wouldn't know, because I never turned computers on in those days, and still don't turn a lot of computers on. Just might as well use my phone. But when I went to the library a couple times when I got back home, I did find several books, and I was looking for pictures of these things, and I finally did find a picture that looked like it. And I don't remember what the name of the book was, but it was, but in there it had like 10 different type of Bigfoot in there. And the second one, it was called the number 2 type creature, and it was called the wood booger. And it looked just almost like what I'd seen. And since then, I've seen that same picture, I think, on Reddit. I think it's called Reddit. And it's the number 2 wood booger. So that looks as close to it as anything I've ever seen. It looks completely different than any I've ever seen since. It was the meanest looking creature I've ever seen. The face was so evil looking. It had like a black, leathery looking face. Didn't have a lot of hair under its eyes or on its nose, but it was covered with hair everywhere else. It had regular teeth. There wasn't any fangs or anything. There were black teeth, and they were kind of stained yellow. And it was solid black. I'm guessing by where the tree limb was, it was probably right around 8 foot or a little bigger, a little less. It had a real big chest. Its legs weren't huge from the knee down, but it was, I'm guessing, 600 or 800 pounds, probably. But definitely the meanest thing I've ever heard, ever seen. The way it even made the noises it made were just really fearful. I've never seen anything like it, as far as a creature goes. So I've never seen one of those types since, and I hope I don't. But you know, it could have harmed me after years went by, and I started thinking about it. It could have come and got me if it had wanted to. It would have had no problem, but it didn't. So I pretty much take my grandfather's advice. I think it was just trying to scare me out of its area. It didn't want me there. So, but it took a lot of thought, a lot of years, you know, to get over that. And it was definitely life changing. I know it changed my life completely. So I didn't hunt, didn't go in the woods for about 7 years. I would still deer hunt, but I have places and on my farm and other farms that I can pull up on and back in the farm and set my truck with a friend and wait till they come out in the field. But I didn't go in the woods. I was too scared to go in the woods. I thought there was more. So,
yeah. Do you have a copy of that picture, or is there any way you could get us a copy? I'm just curious what you saw, what it looked like. You said there's at least two types. Was it more gorilla looking or man looking?
No, I do have a picture, but I don't know how to send it while I'm on. But
okay, if you can do it when we're done, yeah.
Yeah, I do have a picture that's similar to that. And actually, one of the ladies in my group, which is one of the best artists, she's really good at the AI type stuff, Linda Woods, she's actually trying to do an actual picture of what it looks like for me now. And she volunteered to do that. Super nice lady. And I've never seen another one like that, no. And I'm sure they're still probably in that area. My grandfather's passed now, and I haven't been up there, and I haven't been on that farm in years, but somebody else owns it now. But be glad to send you a picture. Yeah, I wish I'd have done it before the show.
That's all right. We didn't know. But yeah, I'd like to see it. Yeah, they say there's different types, you know, baboon-looking ones even maybe out there running around. The weird thing is from what we hear, it sounds like you said, they're not going to harm you unless they really would have to. But it's almost like if they see a human for them, it's like game over. Whatever they're doing, if they see a human, they're done. They gotta stop and they gotta leave. And they're pissed about it. You know, it's like, oh God, there's a human in my area. I'm done. I gotta get out of here. You know, he could have just went after those deer, but he didn't. He could have kept going after him. He's like, oh shoot, there's Daryl. I gotta go.
I think he was probably surprised. Well, he knew I was there. I have no doubt that that's what I heard that morning, because what I heard was like a person walking. And I knew there was nobody back in there. Now, you know, I think there's, I don't know how many different type of, I call some of them forest people, I call some of them Bigfoot, because I truly do believe there is a difference. So over the years of experience and my own encounters and my own sightings that I've seen, that I've seen three different types. Now, I haven't, there may be more, but I've never, that's what I've personally witnessed over the years. So, that was definitely nowhere even close to the other two I seen. It was, the other ones didn't look evil like this one did. So it was just a fierce, mean-looking face this thing had. And very strange that something like that even existed. So, you know, you grow up hearing stories, and I remember my grandmother used to tell me when we were playing as kids up in that area, she would say, y'all need to come in the house because a booger man will get you. Well, a booger man was what I seen. So, and my grandfather had told me that. So, I don't know. It was very, very, very life changing. And I'm glad now that I did see it, because I do know they exist. And I learned a lot from that experience. So there's so many, I believe, so many more cryptids in the woods now than there was 20 years ago. I don't know why that is, but there seems to be more now than there's ever been. So,
yeah, we've been hearing a lot about that, and we think the same thing. There's more and more now than ever. I don't know if it's because of the dwindling habitat from,
I think it's got a lot to do with it. Plus a lot more people are in the woods looking for them. But, and then again, too, you know, I've got friends that are into the spiritual part of it, and they say the veil is closing and there's more creatures coming. I don't say I disagree with anything anymore. Somebody called and told me there was a flying dragon in New York City, I'd say, well, where's it at? I'd probably believe it. So I would never say no, nothing doesn't exist, because after what I've seen, and you know, I would have, if I'd have been like my friends, I'd have felt the same way. So took a long time to talk about it, though. That was a hard thing back in 92, because you couldn't just go out and tell everybody you seen a Bigfoot, because they thought you were crazy. And you know, at that time, I think at that time I just got into political office, and I was a commissioner in my county, and one of my best friends was Martin Groves, and he was the chief sheriff's deputy. And a year later, he has an encounter, but with a dog man. So, you know, he and I used to talk about this stuff. We couldn't tell anybody. He was afraid he'd get fired, and I was afraid people would think I was nuts. So we didn't discuss it, but just between ourselves. So pretty weird how things have changed. People are a lot more open-minded now. Plus, you have these social media groups like mine, and you can discuss these things. But 30 years ago, you start telling people about Bigfoot, they're ready to call you and tell you to go to the crazy house. So,
yeah, you're right. The mainstream has kind of accepted Bigfoot a lot more nowadays than it used to. Although I still get kind of laughed at from time to time when I tell people that I do this podcast and I believe in Bigfoot. You know, my wife and I were having the conversation yesterday. I'm like, what is it going to take to get you to believe that Bigfoot is real? You know, and she's like, I got to see one, period. Got to see one. So maybe I'll get
it. Well, my family is the same way. You know, my parents, they believe me. They've never seen one, because, you know, they do believe me, but they think they believe me. My brother, he thinks that I seen a bear or something. He's never seen one, and he doesn't believe that they exist, but he believes me. He just thinks I seen something else. So, and I hear that a lot. Just about every story you hear, well, it was a bear. And you know, there's sure is a lot of bears running around out there in areas that don't even exist. So, but anyway, that's another story to get on there. So,
did you have a dogman encounter too? Did you say?
I've seen two dogmen actually, and I've never seen one in those days. My first dogman encounter was, I live up here on the coast, like I was telling you here, between Virginia Beach and the Outer Banks. I live on the coast up here on the Atlantic, a couple weeks out of the month. And I go to a little market here. It's kind of out in the country in the morning, and there's a lot of old farmers there and just guys that sit around a table. And I've kind of got to know those guys, and I go in there and drink coffee with them occasionally in the morning, and just super nice people, and just kind of like being at home. We have that same thing at home. And I was in there one morning, and the Indian man that owns the gas station and little restaurant there, the counter's right next to this table, and this gentleman walked in one morning with his son, and he walks up to the counter, and he asks this guy named Hans, who he doesn't speak English great, but he's a real nice guy, and he does pretty well with it as far as understanding. And this guy, just out of nowhere, I'm sitting there, I could hear what he's saying. He said, have you heard about any creatures killing animals up here? And it kind of caught my attention. I remember I looked to the right when I heard it to see who he was and listen to him. And we all did. Everybody at the table did. And the guy didn't understand what he was talking about. He goes, something is killing my goats, and it's killed all my aunt. I live with my great aunt, and it's killed all her goats. And so I turned and asked him, I said, well, what kind of creature is it? And he said, I don't know. He said, but it's whatever it is, it's come in and it's killed all six of her goats at different times. It's been coming in, and now she doesn't have any goats. And he said, I'm kind of scared to let my son play out there because I don't know what this is. And I said, well, have you seen it? And he said, no. He said, but I've got all kinds of strange looking tracks around the barn that they were in, the small barn. And I said, well, I said, do you have any, you know what the tracks, you got any idea what they look like? Can you give me a description? He goes, no, but he said, if one of you guys would come out there, I'll let you look at them. And I said, well, how far do you live? And he lived, it seemed like it was close to an hour and a half away. And I said, well, I don't know the area that well. And he said, well, here's my address. He wrote down the address and his phone number. And he said, if you'll come out there. And I asked any other guys, of course, the other guys, they said, nah, we don't care about going out there. So I went by myself out there the next day. And lost my GPS out there, and it's in Tazewell County, Virginia, and pretty good ways, and it's way out there. It's on the back, it's on the side, right below the Blue Ridge Mountains in a really remote area, little farm out there. And I had lost my GPS when I got there almost because my service went out, and I called I went back about 10 miles to get service, and I called the gentleman. He met me, and I followed him out there. And I went over there and pulled up next. He had to cross a creek and turn to the left to get up to his farm. His aunt's, he lived with his aunt. Him and his wife and son lived with his great aunt. And I went over to the barn area, and I seen the tracks, and I knew right away what it was. I knew it wasn't a Bigfoot because the tracks were, I've seen those tracks before at the LBL many times. And matter of fact, Martin Groves and I posted quite a few of those last year when we were there two different times. But I knew it was a dogman. It was just a big track that was, even had the back part of the hock and where the back part of the hock was. And then it had a long kind of spread out big wolf looking track with long claws. I thought it was a dog man, and I knew there wasn't any wolves there, so it was too big to be a wolf. And he said, well, it comes in here, and he says, we don't know what it is. And they were pretty frightened because they were afraid to even go out at night. So he took me to an area right to the right of his farm, and he said that ridge up there, there was a little road that went up that ridge, kind of like a dirt road, and it overlooked this large field between his house and the ridge. It was probably 200 or 300 yards wide, and it ran all the way to the creek, but it was fenced in with a barbed wire fence. That's where the goats had been. And he said, you can come over here and set up on that hill there in your truck, and you can look for it or watch for it. And he said, you can shoot it if you want to. And I said, well, I don't know that I want to shoot it, but I'll try to see what I can do to see it and let you know what it is. And I went out there for, oh gosh, it was probably every day in the afternoon for probably a good 2 weeks, and I never seen anything. And I was just about to give up. And I pulled up on that ridge. I can't remember. I think it was on a Friday evening. And I was just watching over the area, that field, because he said they were coming out of that field up in the corner. And it was right before dark and light enough to see, but it was probably 30 minutes before the sun was down. And I seen in the corner of the woods on the other side of the barbed wire fence, I seen a black creature kind of squatted down on the opposite side of the fence. And I had binoculars and I pulled out the binoculars and looked at it, and I can see it looked like a big dog. And it, all of a sudden it jumped over the fence and it ran across this field. And this field had a lot of sage in it, sage grass. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of a tall, gold looking grass. But it wasn't completely thick with it. It had patches of it. And this thing was, it ran so different is what got my attention at first. It didn't run like a dog. It galloped like a horse. And it wasn't huge, but it, I watched it go all the way across the field, all the way to my, I was looking at the left when it came in the corner of the field, and it went to the, it came across the field to the right where I was overlooking it on top of that hill. And when it got to the fence, that's when it stood up. And that's what got my attention. I'd never seen one. And it stood up and it turned and looked in my direction. It didn't look at me, but it looked in my direction. And then it just stepped over the fence and went into the wood line. But that's the first one I've ever seen. And it was nothing like I thought they would look like. Because I was thinking they were, you know, huge, you know, 10 foot tall, like I've heard, or 8 foot tall. This one was probably about 6 foot tall. It was solid black. It had a head like a German Shepherd. That's what it looked like. Couldn't see any real distinguishing features besides that. You know, it looked like a dog head, but it was, had the hawk legs like you've heard. And then it went through the, wood line and went into the woods, and I lost sight of it. Well, it got my attention, so I went back out there. It was almost dark. I went back out there the next day, and I carried my gun, and I went in to where it went in, and walked down a trail there. It was a game trail that ran through there. Looked like a game trail. And I found there were a lot of bones, in that area that was kind of surprising, different type bones. And it went all the way around to a bluff, like a big bluff. And I got to the bluff and it was like something had dug out up under this bluff. And you could see tracks going in there. So this thing was apparently living up under that bluff. And I didn't go any closer because I don't know, you know, of course, me being by myself, I don't think it's very safe to go out there by yourself anyway, but I seen where it was going, and I'd actually went on back and got my truck, and I was coming back with my camera. I didn't have a camera, I had my cell phone, but I'd come back, and I went and bought a camera. I was going to try to take pictures of it. And I went back the next day and went back in there, did not see it or see it again. And I kept going back out there. And one morning I was crossing the creek. It was a few days after that. And when I was crossing the creek, there was a game warden coming from the Virginia Wildlife Services agent. And he was coming from across the creek, and I was going across the creek into the area I was in, and he stopped me and he said, "What are you doing over here?" And I said, "Well, these folks gave me permission to come up here and scout out their area." And he said, "Well, what are you scouting for?" I'm just up here looking at wildlife. I didn't want to tell him a lie, but I didn't want to tell him what I was doing. And he said, "Well, you know, you've got permission from these folks." And I said, "I do." He said, "Do you have a note?" And he said, I said, "No, I don't." They gave me verbal permission. So he followed me up to the house and they told him that I had permission to be there. And we went back. He was telling me as he was leaving, he said, "There's some type of animal out here He said it's been killing livestock all around the area, and you need to be cautious out there if you're walking around this area, because we don't know what it is. But I would suggest you not go back in there. And he said he checked my guns, my weapons, and he said, you know, don't go in there. And he said, you really don't need to have weapons. It's not any hunting season right now. And I kind of didn't want to disagree with him, but I went up there for a few weeks after that, walked back in there several times, and I never seen the creature or anything of it again. So I don't know if the Wildlife Resources Agency had killed it or captured it or it just left the area. But that was my very first sighting, and that was October of 2021.
Daryl, where do you think these things are coming from?
You know, I've been, me and Martin Groves and Barton Nunley have talked about this. I was so telling how many conversations we've had about this, sitting in the truck or getting ready to camp in the LBL. And, you know, I have to agree with them. I think some of the creatures are flesh and blood. I think some of them are spiritual or a different entity. I don't know how that could be. You know, we sort of believe they're almost like something made from a government lab or something, because, you know, I never even heard of a dog man to 4 or 5 years ago. And all of a sudden I hear about them everywhere. And, you know, that was the first experience I'd ever had. I've been in the woods hunting all my life, except for the short span I didn't hunt, and I never seen one. So, but then again, I've got friends that's hunted, you know, 30, 40 years. They've never seen anything in the woods, not even a forest person or a Bigfoot or anything out of the way. I do think some people are more, for some reason, can see creatures that other people can't. I don't understand how that works, but I do believe that. I know I do. I feel like I'm one of those people, for some reason, they've chosen to let me see them. And, so it's very strange. I don't really know what it is, but I don't think they're all natural. The one Martin Groves and I seen in the LBL in October of 22, four or five months ago, I've never seen anything like that. And I'd be honest with you, I hope I never see another one like it. So that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Want to tell us about that real quick, if you can?
Sure. The one Martin and I seen, we had been in there. Martin and I go, we're real close, and we get together, and we'll go in there by ourselves sometimes. A lot of times Martin will go with us, but, you know, a lot of times he can't go because he watches his children, his grandchildren. So we had been in there we had been in there the whole day, and we went up there for one reason that particular time, because it was the 29th anniversary or 30th anniversary. His encounter was, it was probably the 29th, because his encounter was in 93. So it was the anniversary day of when Martin was almost killed in the LBL. And he wanted to go up there. He had been back to that spot that it actually happened on since then. And we went up there early that morning. I drove to his house and rode up there with him and his truck. And we drove to that spot, and it was way back in nowhere. I can't imagine getting back in there, you know, 30 years ago, as rough as it was where we had to go to get back in there. And if you've ever been to the LBL, there's just little roads that feed off everywhere back in the north end. I mean, there's probably literally hundreds of roads, and they're not all, you know, they're not paved at all. They're either gravel or dirt roads. And you could easily get back in there and get lost, you know, if you didn't know the area. But he knows the area real well. So we went back in there that day and walked the actual grounds that he had, not all the way back into where his actual occurrence happened, but we walked right into the front of it and over to the left, because it was so thick back in there and so growed up, and he didn't really want to go back all the way to the spot, but we went to right to the area where it happened. And, you know, it kind of gave him an eerie feeling, and he and I sat and talked for a little bit about it. And it's been a long time since he'd been there. And we heard some some Bigfoot to the left of us, and I don't know how I have it, but I have some way in me that I can, this sounds crazy, but I have a way I feel them. I kind of have a feeling when they're around. And Martin has similar. So, because he looked at me and he goes, they're to the left, aren't they? And I said, yeah, they're to the left. And I could hear them on the ridge, and they were making some noises, some tree banging and different noises they were making. And we stayed there a while, and then we hit it out and we drove to some other areas. And I guess it was the following night. I'm thinking, I don't remember exactly what time it was. It was late. We had went to some other areas and walked and found lots of dogman tracks and lots of evidence. And then we had went back to the same location, very close to it. Not exact, but real close to it. And we had stopped out in the middle of nowhere, and he lowered his tailgate down, and we went and sat on the tailgate out in the dark and put our little lantern up on the tailgate and had our snacks. That was our dinner for the night, and we hadn't eaten anything since early that day. We were sitting there, and I heard something to the left, and it fairly close, I don't know, maybe 50 yards, and I could hear something moving around in the brush. And I thought, and he heard it too, and he looked at me, and we both got quiet and just looked in the area and started looking over in there. And it's really dark out there anyway. When it's dark out there, it's like pitch black. And we looked over in that area, and he looked at me, and he said, let's get in the truck. So we shut the tailgate and got in the truck, and we drove up in his truck, started it up, and we turned. There's a little dirt road that turned to the right there where we heard this noise, and we turned. We're probably doing 1 mile an hour, just barely going. And I've got my window down on the passenger side. He's driving, and as soon as we turned that road and drove just maybe 15 or 20 foot, I looked to the right, and there's like a ditch there. And the ditch is like 7 or 8 foot lower than the road. And it turned out to be a creek when we went back and investigated it a few days later. But it's an old creek bed there, but it looked like a ditch from the road. And when I looked over into that ditch, this huge thing was laying there. And it literally just shocked me to death. I'd never seen anything like that. It was laying in the grass. There was grass and kind of like cattail looking things there, and it was laying in it. Couldn't see its feet. They were down in the grass and the rocks, and it was looking right at me, just staring at me as I had my window down. And it was huge. The head was about as big as half the windshield. It was that big. And it was probably about 8 foot long, just guessing. And it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It was silver, sparkly silver gray. And it had almost like outlined with like a tiny light or something, like an outline. And it had, the eyes were what got my attention, because they were looking right at me. They looked like two tiny flashlights. It was just like cylinders, and clear cylinders looking at me. And it had the most evil looking face. And then it had this huge mane around its neck, like a lion. And it was looking right at me. It looked like a cat does when it's about to pounce on a toy or a mouse or something. It was down like that, like it was about to pounce on the truck. And when I looked at it, I was just kept staring at it. And Martin slowed down a little bit, and I looked at it, and I looked over to him. He said, did you just see what I seen? I said, how could I not? It's right here next to me. And about that time, it came out of that ditch, and Martin was looking through the rearview mirror, because we weren't stopped, but we were barely moving. And it went across behind our truck, went up the side of the hillside on the other side. And it was a steep hill on the other side, and you could hear it breaking branches and stuff going up through there. And about that time, I got sick. It was a different sick. I've been kind of what they call zapped or whatever you want to call it by Bigfoot a couple of times, but never like this kind. This was more in my chest area where the Bigfoot has always been in my stomach and I get a headache. This was like in my chest and my legs were tingly. And I looked over at Martin and he slumped over on the wheel. And I said, "Are you all right, man?" I was shaking him with his shoulder. "Are you okay?" And he looked up at me and he said, "I can't breathe, Bubba. I can't breathe." And his tongue was swelling up and his throat was swelling together. And I said, "Well, man, we got to get out of here and get you to the doctor." And he said, "No, I'm not going to the doctor." He was talking and he said, "I just can't breathe. I can't hardly breathe." And he was sick. We went on out of there and got as quickly as we could back to the main traceway under some lights. And we got out. I got him out. He was getting a little better, but he still wasn't breathing good. And he was really sick. And I said, "Well, let me drive." I said, "Do you want me to take you to the emergency room?" And I'd gotten to feeling a little better with my legs. I didn't feel tingly, but I still felt sick, but not like he did. And I said, "What happened to us back there?" And he said, "I have no idea." But this, you know, he was sick for almost 2 weeks after that. Now he could breathe, but he was still sick. And I was really worried about him. The strange thing about that was a couple of days after that, you know, he called me up and says, and Martin has a word, he always calls me, "Hey, Bubba, this thing has sprayed some kind of stuff all over my truck." And I said, "What do you mean it sprayed it on the truck?" And some kind of coating was on his truck. And I didn't see it because I'd already started coming back home. I was on the road. And I was coming to this area here where I stay. I've lost my smell. I don't smell like I'd be able to smell like I once did since I had COVID 2 years ago, but I don't have that sense like I did have. And the inside of the truck really smelled bad. And he said, "The truck smells so bad, I can't hardly get in it." So he took it to a couple places. I think he spent $300 or $400. He had it buffed and cleaned and the interior cleaned and everything else. And it still got a little bit of the residue on the hood that he couldn't get off, but the smell is out of the truck. But it was a very strange, I've never seen anything like that. It almost looked, this probably really sounds crazy, but it almost looked like a cartoon figure. That's how weird it was, really looked. I've never seen anything like that.
Was it like a cat? Was it like a dog? Was it a monkey?
No, it was like a dog head, but it had a more of a round head, a dog head, between a lion and a dog. It had a big old mane hanging down from under its neck, like a lion, and just with a weird looking expression on its face. Completely like dead staring right at me. But it was, I don't know how to explain it. It was like I've told people before, it was kind of like a cartoonish figure. It didn't even seem like a flesh and blood type creature. But, you know, that's what I was saying. I think there was a different type of dogman already, because I don't think this was nothing like what I'd seen the first time.
So what do you think it is about the LBL down there that it would be more so attractive to the dogman type creature?
You know, there's a lot of weird stuff about the LBL. I'm only going by what I've been told because I don't know, but I'd believe anything Barton Nunley told me. He's very close, good friend. And, you know, Joe and Jesse are good friends of Hellbent Holler, and they've been there many times too and had some really strange experiences. And
I like their videos.
I pretty much believe that, you know, those things, if you go back to even the late 1700s and you read about that area, which I think in that time it was called the land between the rivers, I believe was the name of that. Actually, that's Martin's. His book was Beast Between the Two Rivers, his first book. And his second book, I'm actually in it. Our story's in his second book that came out about a month ago, which I think is sold out everywhere, but our story's in there in the back of the book of what we've seen that night at LBL. But I think that there, by what I've been told by a lot of people that know that area well, there's tunnels that go all the way up under the LBL that go for miles up under the land of the LBL. Now, I've never seen those. I've been to the actual, what they call the kill site in the early 80s, where the family was massacred there by two or three creatures. But I think it's, like I said, if you go back to the 1700s, there was people talking about the creature that killed livestock and terrorized cabins and everything else, a similar type creature, dogman type creature, even in that time. So they have apparently been there a long time, if you go by what's been said over the years in folklore and people that have lived around there. Now, this creature we've seen, to me, I don't know what it was. I know it was a dog-type creature, and I would call it a dog man because of that. But where they come from, I can only think it's maybe some type of something that's been built by somebody. I don't know. It's very strange. It didn't look like a flesh and blood type creature.
Yeah, I wonder that sometimes too. I wonder if the government's not playing God out there and just creating these things and dropping them off out in the woods somewhere.
Well, just about every time I start talking about the LBL or saying something about the government out there, my phone gets hacked or I lose something. Or, you know, my phone got hacked in October, the week right after I posted Martin's speech in the group that we had at the Dogman Conference at Paris last year. And, you know, I was told to take it down or I'd lose my group, and I took it down. And I don't know. There's a lot of speculation. There's a whole lot of things going on at LBL, even now. I don't know. I only know what I've been told by my close friends that are there a lot, and, you know, and they are there a lot. They go in there by themselves a lot in the daytime and the evening, and I tell them not to because it's fairly dangerous, but
right. There's
a lot of stuff going on there. I don't know if it's all the government.
Is there a military base close by there? Do you know?
Fort Campbell is there, but it's not right at the LBL. I don't know the exact distance to Fort Campbell, probably 30 or 40 miles away. But
it's still not that far.
Not that far, no. No, and there's a lot of weird things in the LBL. We were there, a whole group of us was up there last month, and we actually had a couple cabins. We camped up there, and we walked back to what they call the bunkers. And why they would have bunkers and out in the middle of nowhere is very strange to me. You know, these bunkers are like kind of like a bomb shelter. There's like two or three of them. And at one time they had a huge steel door on them where, you know, where it would be pretty secure to keep anything from getting in or getting out. But that has always been strange to me, why you would have bunkers out in the middle of nowhere. And there's lots of places in the LBL that's been closed off the last few years, and it seems to be more of them now. So you can't go into those areas. They don't want you in there.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they let as many people in that area as they do, honestly, with what we hear that goes on.
Well, it's such a large area. You know, it's like 260,000 acres. I mean, it covers a large portion of Tennessee and Kentucky. It's actually where the Cumberland River turns into the Lake Barkley, they call it, from Cheatham Dam until it meets Kentucky Lake, and then it runs to the Tennessee River. But the north end always before seemed to have more dogman activity than the south end. The south end had mainly Bigfoot activity, but now it seems like that's changed. It seemed like there was more dogman activity on the south end. So, I don't know. I'm talking about what I hear about as far as me, a dog man personally in the LBL. All I've ever seen is the one I just told you about there. So, but I know Martin has seen another one when he and Barton and I were there 3 weeks ago. We stayed in an area that we were told that nobody had ever stayed there all night because there was too many creatures in there. We were led there by a guide that we know, and he said, nobody's ever stayed here. You sure you want to stay here? And we did. We stayed there. And we camped, had a fire and camped out there. And, oh my gosh, that was a wild night. I mean, we had really a wild night that night. We heard all kinds of dogmans howling across the lake and on top of the hill from us. And, you know, had a couple of creatures not too far from us that appeared to be Bigfoot, a young one and a bigger one. And Martin, again, had gotten real sick. And that time I thought we was going to take him to the hospital. And Martin, just us three out there and all this, I took him down to a ways several times. He had gotten sick and I had to take him to a shower area where he could go in there and try to get himself put back together. And we went back and parked where we were and got out and got our camp going again. We stayed out there all night and we heard stuff all night long, and it got a little eerie there in the middle of the night. I told Barton, I said, if these things come in, you better be ready. Because what I've seen from and heard, they're so fast, you know, that they can move in pretty fast on you. But we didn't have anything try to attack us, but we heard and seen a lot of stuff. But it was a pretty eerie feeling when you start hearing these howls behind you and on top of the hill in front of you and to the left of you. And they sound like they were really close, but they never came in and did anything to us. We didn't have any bad encounter. We just had a lot of action.
You guys are brave. We want to thank you for coming on and talking to us today. I know we want to get you back on and do another show because I know you got a lot more stuff that you can give us.
Yep.
But we appreciate you doing what you do, having your group and having us in it, and just being a guy out there that's making things happen and reporting and helping this effort.
Well, man, I appreciate you guys. I really do. I've been friends with you quite a while, and I appreciate you being in the group. And, you know, I appreciate you having me on. I'm honored to be on, and I'll be more than happy to try to get on with you again. And
yeah, for sure.
If I could, I'd like to have a shout out to my close friends, Martin Nunley and Humanoids, his group, join his group. Martin's a moderator expert in my group. And of course, Martin Groves has got two books out. And his latest book is sold out everywhere.
What's the name of that newest book?
This is his newest book right here.
Beast Between the River.
Right. Okay.
Looks cool.
I'm actually in the back chapter of this. Just me and him are in there about our encounter at the LBL, that one I told you about. Mm-hmm. And also the Blinds and Booze and my close friend, Jeremiah Fountain. He's another close friend, one of my best friends. So
awesome.
Anybody else I left out, I'm sorry, didn't mean to. But thank you for having me on there. And,
yeah, man.
It was our pleasure, Daryl. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
And send us that picture if you could. And then if...
Glad to do that.
I know we want to get Barton and maybe your friend on at some point, too. They can... if you want to send us that book, we can put that on our group page, too. It might help out a little bit, so...
Hey, I appreciate that. I'll do that.
Yeah,
we sure will.
Thank you.
All right, Daryl.
You, too. We'll stay in touch, and we'll talk again, bud.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll
thanks, Daryl.
What the heck was that gray creature that he was talking about in there? What do you think that was?
I don't know. I've never heard anybody describe anything like that. That's first for that one. It's pretty wild.
The scent or the spraying or whatever it did and made him feel sick or whatever. What's going on in this world? What are these things coming from?
I don't know. That's crazy.
Good stuff from Daryl. I'm glad we got him on.
Yeah, me too. That was a good one. Go check out his group page, everybody, on Facebook.
Bigfoot Believers and Other Creatures. And also check out our website if you would like to, www.cryptidcreatures.net. What can they get on there, man? They can get what, extra episodes?
They can get extra episodes. They can get to our store. They can
check out the blogs.
Submit their encounters.
Yes. Brian, thanks again, my friend.
Hey, man, always fun.
You got it, bud. We'll get out of here.
Yep. See ya.